A recorder joined.
Okay, sorry everyone, we can continue.
Okay.
So I was mentioning editorial manager. It seems to me that it would be very easy to talk them into putting a somewhat generic page in the process of submitting a paper. They currently have several pages that are not directly part of the text anyway. So that's at least one way to get the data in. I don't know how to get it out, though.
Yeah, see, that, I think that's actually going to be an interesting challenge, is if all of the different journals are doing this individually, who's going to be responsible from our group for making sure that people get the data?
Well, editorial manager does manage a number of journals, which is one.
Yeah. Well, there's also, so the Elsevier journals have something, and the Oxford University Press has one, Highwire has one. So maybe there is a small number we can target first.
That's an idea.
This is Yuri from SUD, but it sounds like, you know, there's two issues. One is trying to get the journals on board philosophically with this, you know, which we haven't done. And then the second issue is implementation. So it seems like, you know, the first step is writing to the journals and getting them to agree that this is a problem, or this is, you know, having them understand what the issues are from our point, and then, you know, working through with them about the implementation issues, because we can present them with multiple options to figure out what would work best. But if we don't have them on board philosophically, then implementation issues are, you know, we could talk ourselves blue in the face about it now.
Yeah, that's
those
true.
Those things are not always disconnected, though.
No, but I mean, you know, we don't have to work out a specific proposal for implementation at this point. You know, we could propose, you know, multiple options for them so they don't feel like they're being backed into a corner saying, you know, we need you to do it this way. But, you know, the first step is to present the whole situation, get them on board with the idea philosophically, and, you know, we could propose a couple options for implementation down the road, but not focus on the implementation issues immediately. I mean, you know, maybe the whole issue of getting all the journals or various journals on board is going to be really easy, and that would be great.
Well, it could be that if there's one or two journals that will get on board, it could be that the rest will follow because they'll see it's reasonable, authors don't object. From my past experiences with those HUPO PSI meetings, and once or twice there were representatives of I think Nature there, and the major problem I think they've seen, or at least they made impression they see, is that, you know, if they put up those strict requirements and so forth, then suddenly authors will go away. So journals were to a certain extent scared that you know, if they ask for extra stuff from the authors, they lose customers. So, but if there are going to be one or two or three cases where authors don't complain, maybe this will just trigger the others to do the same thing.
Is the question from Mike here at Stanford again? Does the BioCurator group have any has a working group working? Sorry, does the BioCurators have any sort of subgroup that are trying to draft a letter, or have they been contacting journals?
Well, I mean, we did. It's not a subgroup I'm representing DIP, which is Database Interacting Proteins, and formerly PI on the project is David Eisenberg. He started to contact two or three journals, and we did put on a wiki a letter which might be reasonable to use as a starting point for drafting something to send to the authors. So
what you're saying is, I'm talking about the group that runs the BioCurator meetings. You're doing this as part of that?
This is totally independent.
Yeah, so is anybody here from the BioCurator group? Tanya, you involved in that?
I'm here, but I'm not involved in it.
I don't know of that happening, Mike.
Okay, I just vaguely remembered something like that. So there was a group here at Stanford, and there's also a group at Yale, I think, that had something called the Structured Data Abstracts, which goes a lot to this, and that they're trying to get more information specified as the papers were submitted. It's really just part of the online submission process. And they were telling me, at least the Stanford folks, that they had Higher Ed Press, and I thought they said Science were on boards for sort of requiring authors to do more. And I'll certainly check with them to see how much they've talked with people. Okay, so is there anybody, so it looks like Dip has a letter. Do we want to start with that and edit that? I mean, we don't have to do it on the call, but are there others that would like to get involved with that for the initial draft of a letter?
I'd be happy to have a look at it and sign it.
So I'm specifically asking for somebody that wants to look over the letter and for the writing of it. I mean, I'm sure we would all want to sign it.
Judy, I will.
I will too, Tanya.
This is Jennifer from RGD. I'd be happy to, but I'm not going to be around for a week and a half. So if it's going to happen within that amount of time, I won't be here.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we've got a couple of things.
We can put it on the weekend and have people sort of decide what they want to do, at what extent they want to, like, edit the manuscript.
Yeah, so I was thinking we just want a timeline, because...
Yeah, end of the month? I don't know.
So can we get that draft put up on the wiki?
The draft is already on the wiki
since
like a couple of weeks, I think, or so.
Yeah, it's about two-thirds down on the wiki page.
Should Judy, Tanya, me, and Mary want to look at it?
Yeah, so it would be great if you guys want to have a first look at it and then just let folks know that's up. And then I was just thinking that it would be good to have a small group look at it first and then before so that everybody starts editing everything and it has its life of its own.
Okay.
Then we can test it actually with PNAS, I think, because I mean we already started the process of bugging the editor, so if there's a more or less final version of this draft, if people are willing to sign it, we'd be happy to just send it to the PNAS editors and see what happens. So just in support of the request. So.
Yeah, and actually something just occurred to me on how PlantFizz did it with us is that they had the option of either having it integrated into the actual manuscript submission process, which is handled by BenchPress, or doing something else, and what they chose was something else, and so they have the form, if you actually look at the URL, it's hosted on the website of the American Society for Plant Biology, which is the society that publishes the journals, but it's not the publishing arm. And so it's not like, you know, if we're going to say to Highwire, you know, we've gotten in touch with all your journals, you could use this to call that you publish. It's not part of BenchPress, it's part of AASPC. So we might also want to contact if there are societies that publish multiple journals. For instance, ASPB publishes both Plant Physiology, which is the journal that we're working on right now, and Plant Cell, which is our next likely victim.
Okay, so this sounds good. So we have at least a plan. The letter can be edited by the small group there. We'll talk more about it. It looks like as far as the implementation, you know, we've got a couple nice choices, and we don't have to work out the details for that now, but at least we've got, in case anybody asks, we have, you know, at least something to tell the editors.
Okay.
So the other topic that was mentioned to me was the idea of a section on the wiki where people add papers that were particularly difficult to curate. Do you think that's a useful suggestion? Would you actually add information there?
Well, I mean, at least the idea, I think, is that if we're going after journals to submit this information, then there's a chance that instantaneous response is going to be, oh, but this information is already there.
Mm-hmm.
So then maybe it makes sense to make a list of cases where actual information is not there, so then we can point people to editors or whoever to a place where there is actually a list of cases where, well, it's not exactly true that information is provided. So that's the idea.
And so these would be examples of things where, in one case where the reviewers have let it come through.
Yes, exactly. So that type of things where supposedly information is there, but there's no way to identify what was actually done. So this is exactly what we're asking for, to provide information which is needed to create papers. So
this is Jennifer from RGD. I think it would be a good idea to include on that page what it was that made that paper difficult to curate, whether it was that the species was not mentioned or if it was something else.
Good point.
So I don't know how hard it is to actually implement it on a wiki page, but maybe it's just a matter of adding extra pages somewhere there under
yep.
Just common listing of some sort.
Right. I think that we could just have another page that linked up to the current wiki section there. There's a lot of lurkers on the call. Anybody else want to jump in?
We're content to lurk, Mike.
So my guess is we've sort of talked this one out for today, the idea of the letters and the journal editors and things. I think we've made some progress there.
One additional thought, Tim Lowry from RGD, might be to seek the support of some granting agencies to go along with our support of the idea of uniformly submitting data.
I don't know if it's feasible, but is it possible? Typically, databases are funded through NIH, NSF, whatever, and there's some officer which is a contact point. Is there any way to somehow convince those people that the institution they represent is going to save money by actually asking original authors to submit data in a reasonable way to the journals? Because after all, database is paid dearly to provide information which is much cheaper to generate by the original authors. So on a big scale, I mean it should save money for NIH, let's say.
That's true. If we can increase our efficiency by not waiting through papers that we actually can't curate.
Because I think, at least in case of U.S., I mean, most of the papers that database funded by NIH is most of those papers are actually paid for by NIH, and they are paying once to generate the data, and then second time for someone to actually go through the data and extract the information into database funded by NIH. So it would be much more efficient if it's done by the authors, at least. This is the basic level of.
I think this is an important part of justifying it to the journals, is that we may not be curating all of their papers as much as they like because we can't find the information in what they publish. Certainly the NIH folks, what you're suggesting about them paying for it twice is true, and they need us all to increase efficiency because budgets aren't growing and such. But I think this also would be a good point for the journals themselves. Sort of why should they do this? It's not just being altruistic to sort of help these few curators. It's actually if more information would get in there, and it should help them because we'll be pointing back to their published papers.
So I just wonder, does any database actually track the number of times a given paper is accessed through a given database?
We do.
We can.
Yeah, we do too.
We certainly can say how many times a reference page is touched. But the references
until the
all appear.
The information, though, the information is on the summary page.
Yeah, the summary detail page contains a lot of the information that they would be seeking.
I mean, more specifically, I wonder, a lot of pages do provide links to PubMed IDs. I just wonder.
Yeah, it's all throughout the database. Almost every page will be links to a journal.
But the thing is, people don't necessarily follow that link, right? They go to your database, they get the information, the PubMed ID reference is there. They don't necessarily click on the PubMed ID, and you don't really know which piece of information they've taken from the page.
So that's the point. If there's a way, if it's traceable, actually, this number of times PubMed ID is clicked,
well, I just don't think they would do that. I don't think that's not a reasonable thing to have. I mean, I think the number of papers that we're incorporating into our database to extract information that's relevant to genomic researchers, we could generate. We can tell you how many papers, 7,000, 9,000 papers that have information relevant to ontology annotations, we gather each year, and we can tell you the percentage of a certain journal that's in that process.
But this is a selling point to whoever's paying you for curation, that you created that many papers and people are, if this is supposed to be pushed to the editors, then the argument would be, okay, you see, we've put up your papers in our database and then see how many people went to actually check your paper.
We do that at SDD. We monitor the link outs, so we can look at the detail page on the paper as well as the link outs to PubMed as well as the full text from the journal itself.
But I just don't see the value of this. I really don't. And I really think that if the paper is being cited in the databases, then it's a paper that has important information. So I just think the other way would be more useful. The papers that are easier to extract data from that have metadata about taxon and genes and all the IDs that we need to facilitate data curation should see their papers show up in these systems faster, I would think. And that would be a measure of the utility of their efforts.
Yeah, we do it for the reason that we can perhaps prioritize that a particular journal that we have lots of papers for, nobody ever clicks out. So, I mean, not to say that we use that as the only metric, but it's to get an idea of the interest in that particular paper, because if it's just the abstract, that's sort of easy to deal with, but we're reading the whole paper, too. But I do agree that the number of links out are very small, so it's not really enough to make a case one way or the other. It just turned out to be easy for us to track.
Just a matter of finding argument for the journals. That what why where can they gain? Not where the users can gain, where data is just journals.
So anybody else involved with the editorial boards that might have thoughts on what might convince them that this is worthwhile?
Well, I think, as Paul Sternberg, I think the main thing is to say that, the journals exist to serve the academic community, and this is a good thing. That's the main thing. In terms of the journal specifically, I agree it's going to be a competition for all other things being equal. The ones that are more database-friendly are going to be preferred, but it's going to take a long time to see that trend. Right? How many milli impact factor points that's worth it remains to be seen.
Right.
Right. So I think we just say, look, it's any of the journals, you say, look, you exist to serve. This is how you serve better. You're going to serve the scientists better.
Yeah, I do particularly like Judy's idea that, if you're curating, if of the 7,000 new papers you have, 50% are from one journal, that says a lot about the impact of that journal on the database.
Right.
I mean, is there any way to correlate citation number of times given paper was cited versus presence in a database? That's another thought. If it's possible to demonstrate that if a given paper is referred by a given database, then it's cited more often than things that are not in a database. Another argument.
Yeah, but there's no cause and effect there.
Well, be some correlation.
Yeah, my guess is it would be if it's a good paper cited a lot, whether it's in the database or not. But
that
won't really help you.
Here, I think we've sort of come to the end of this discussion, and the next steps would be that a couple of us are going to take this wording here and turn it into a letter. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right, so I think that's enough on this for today, at least for me.
Okay. So nobody mentioned any other topics. So you speak now, or we can call it a short meeting. But, you know, just 45 minutes as opposed to 60. So.
Well, what would the next topic be? Are we going to talk about how people select papers, what tools they use, people who are doing literature? I mean, I'm really interested in how people identify papers that they are going to use in their system.
Okay, so you've just volunteered. Let's hear what NGI does.
Well, we can set this up for the next call maybe, but we have a set of guidelines for each of the maybe six or seven primary areas of data that we select for. And in our case, I know some mods work or some groups work to collect all the data or all the publications for their taxon, and we certainly do not. We select our first, and we have a big problem right off, which is why this taxon idea is so important, because many papers written about human, mouse, and rat do not put the organism in the abstract because it's that sort of dominant sense of this is the only and stuff. So, you know, the first thing is we need access to full text, which is what we've been working towards. And the second thing is that we need to know what taxon's being experimented on in the paper, because our first cut is that we're looking for experiments done in the mouse system. And then beyond that, we're looking for experiments involved in embryonic expression and in mutant phenotypes and mouse models for human diseases, in functional information about gene products, other comparative genomics type studies. I don't know what tumor database, any mouse tumor things, not in cell lines. So we have about 160 to 180 journals that we look at on a regular basis, every single one of those journals that comes out. And each curator involved with the biomedical literature has a subset of those, maybe 6 or 10, depending upon the journal and how often it's published and how big it is. And the job of that person is to what we call triage, and they look at all the papers in the journal and select the ones that they think would be good for any of those subgroups. So that means they have to be roughly familiar with what the criteria are for the groups, like the tumor section does not include any studies in cell lines. It's only primary.
Or injected.
Right.
This is Sue, and our injected cells.
Right. So there's all kinds of little criteria. And in the end, you get these papers identified, and we save all the PDFs and have a file management process in our system. We bring in all the supplementary data, which is interesting because that's a whole other thing we could talk about, is who's keeping supplementary data. Otherwise, it's on all these different servers and disappears. Then we bring into the database the information downloaded from NLM, which includes the abstract and for the paper. There's a shorthand way of doing that and then going and getting the data. But at that point, when a paper is added to the master bibliography, there's a little checkbox that it says which section of the database it's chosen for. For example, whether it's chosen for
alleles, whether it's chosen for phenotypes, whether it's chosen for tumor, whether it's chosen for go, and that allows us to generate a whole series of reports. So papers that have been selected for go for a gene that has no literature annotation. So that would be a high priority paper to look at. So there's a very quick overview. There's a lot of nuances and complexities in there, but well, maybe we could do this sort of thing of how people, and I haven't even begun to tell you about the tools we use, so.
Yeah, I would be very interested in the tool, just the management of that information flow, you know, with what did you say, 180 different journals, and I assume you have much fewer than that number of curators. I mean, how do they actually search through these every week? So.
Well, so one of the things we're using now is an application that we pay for, which is called QoSA, which has all kinds of interconnections with PubMed, and so and they're working closely with us to meet our criteria. It's pretty widely used. Our library system has it with 80 subscribers, but it allows you to do all kinds of complicated searches and write little sort of scripty things, and so you get back your papers, and most of the people doing the QoSA thing have already set up their what they're looking for and which journals and what subsets of things, you know, they need to look at mouse, mice, and murine, and then, but ultimately they have to identify the papers. Now, I have to say that I'm also working with a group in Manchester on employing some natural language processing aspects to this that may select most of the papers automatically if we can do some learning algorithms. And I was very encouraged when I was recently at a workshop over in Germany, which had to do with text mining applications, that Michael Schroeder was able to take all the, you know, we have an FTP file that gives all the PubMed IDs for all the references in our database. They were able to take that file, or they took 50% of that file, took the abstracts, did some learning algorithms on it, then took the other 50% of the file, dumped it into all of PubMed, and were able to come back with like 92% recall of the ones that we had selected. They also picked up ones we hadn't selected, and when we looked at those, they were things like, yeah, it was in mouse, but it was describing promoter activity, and we aren't curating that right now. So, you know, that all took like half an hour. So we are actively working with some natural language processors to see if we could pre-process the papers and get back 80% of what we would get back anyway. And so we're continuing to do our regular process for the next 4 or 5 months, and at that time, they're going to run their algorithm and see. I'm working with them on some other aspects of a little more complex search based on our criteria, and then we're going to see how many they can select and how many they miss, and see if we can't get rid of QoSA. But you know, the problem then becomes you still have to go get the PDFs and get them into a master bibliography and get them into the database system. This is sort of like Texpresso. We're also looking at the Texpresso, and that's another way of doing this. So Texpresso is evolving too.
Is the triage done, you said, by journal, so each curator gets X number of journals that they
look
at
every month?
That's
correct. And that that means that each, I mean, we've changed over the years, we're now all electronic, but it means that all these papers are selected, and then the question is, who does the find selection and how do you do that? We're considering, at the moment, there's what we call secondary triage, where, for instance, someone working in phenotypes will take those papers that have been preliminarily assigned to phenotypes by anyone in the group and make a final selection as to whether they're going to be included. But we're working out, right now, we're considering whether that's cost effective or whether we could, with a little more training, get everyone to the point where they might be getting a few false positives or bringing some papers in that wouldn't be used, but then those would be tossed out as part of the curation process and not part of the triage process. So, and if we could get the balance right there, then we could eliminate that process of secondary triage. Right now, I'd say most people are spending 15% of their time on triage duties a week. And so then the question comes, well, that's obviously not the bottleneck. Well, but it's still 15% of their time. The real bottleneck is somewhere else. And so that's something that we also talk about. Where is the real bottleneck? I mean, I'm seeing ways to improve efficiency on the paper identification and processing angle, but we have other bottlenecks. And one of the things we do, which other groups don't do, is we have subsections. And so a same paper may be looked at by two curators, one who does go functional annotation and one who does mouse phenotype annotation. Now, those are two different systems in that annotating to the go takes certain expertise in the go and the direct assays and what we're looking for there. And annotation to mouse phenotypes is also very, very complex with a lot of mouse genetic assays and making constructs to insert in the mouse and understanding the mammalian phenotype ontology. But about 45% of the papers selected for either go or phenotype are selected for both. So there we're looking at about, I think it's about 5,000 papers that have to be looked at by two different curators. And so is there a way, can we cross-train or have a subset of one or two people who are of the sort that could do both go curation and phenotype curation looking at the paper, and would that bring us more efficiency?
Judy, this is Paul. When do you get the electronic, the PDF? At what stage in your triage curation process? You have to go get the papers.
When the people are looking at the journals, they make the selection right there, and they can actually batch download the PDFs from PubMed from using QoSA tool.
Okay, so as soon as they make any selection.
That's correct.
Okay, cool.
And those papers shared between different groups, presumably just one person is going after identifiers of things there.
There's several different layers of identifiers, but certainly what we call indexing. Indexing is another part of this system that we're trying to get rid of, and that's where this all comes in. We still have to index all papers that are selected. Then there is one person who associates the paper with the proper genes in the database. And this has become easier as we've incorporated many, many synonyms and as the genome systems and genome pipelines assign gene models from the start. But yes, indexing occurs before curation occurs. And if we had any kind of ID associated with a paper that related to, a RefSeq ID, an Ontogene ID, a MGI gene ID, any one of a bunch of IDs would suffice to index the paper to one or more genes in our system, and that's a real pain in the neck.
That's great, Judy. I think we should continue on this topic. I mean, getting others to talk about what they're doing at the next one. I'd certainly like to continue these monthly talks through the summer. I know it'll be probably more difficult to schedule, maybe easier difficult for some. I'll put out a general pitch. Maybe we can get a 3-4 people to volunteer to talk about their process next week. But
why don't we talk about the letter?
Yeah, that's another topic for next month.
Well, yeah. So that we'll have the little, but presumably some of that can happen with the email. I mean, you guys can look at it and you know what I'm saying. But I mean, we don't necessarily have to wait a month to talk about the letter again.
Okay. Yeah. I agree.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 Cameron.
A lot of lurkers.
Left.
This is Warren Bay from Caltech.
Left. 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 Thank you. Please stand by.